Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, good evening, all you good little boys and girls. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project, the show that takes a list, checks it twice, finds out if the movies are naughty or nice. Tonight's movie, we're going to be watching Christmas Evil. Is it G.I. Joe with a kung fu grip, or is it a lump of coal? Let's find out.
I told you he'd be happy that we remembered him.
This Christmas, Santa's going to make everyone happy. The grown-ups. And the kids. Christmas Evil. The non-believers.
Watch out!
And the screamers. And this Christmas, you better believe in Santa, or he'll slay you.
Merry Christmas, Frank.
Christmas Evil, the night he dropped in.
Ho, 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 bitches, we're back! And we just got done watching the trailer for Christmas Evil, a.k.a. You Better Watch Out.
Which, in hindsight, is a much better title than the one that it came out with.
I think the movie sets expectations when you look at the lurid cover art, when you look at the title. You think, oh, that's a slasher flick. This is not a slasher movie at all.
No. Oh, ho, ho, holy shit is not a slasher film. I mean, this movie, a potent character study would do it a disservice. I think this is one of the best examples of a character study that I've seen for a movie of its type. And I would agree that it's not a slasher film.
We open up in like 1947. So this is the just after the war. And young Harry and his brother and his mom sneak downstairs. And they're like, oh, they're all anticipating Christmas Eve. And they're like, oh, it's going to be great. Santa's going to show up and stuff. They hang out for a little bit. Santa doesn't show up. They go off to bed because that's how Santa works. And then Harry hears something downstairs in the middle of the night. And he comes downstairs and he sees Santa. Oh, my God, this is it. It's Santa. And he sees Santa with his mom.
And that stays with him for a real long time. That violation of a kid's fantasy about Santa being this saintly figure. It's like, what's he doing?
Also, an important point is there's a conversation between Harry and his brother Phil about the reality versus the non-reality of Santa. You know, Phil basically says, no, it's just Dad dressed up. And Harry's like, no, you're wrong.
And so this breaks poor little Harry's mind. And for the rest of his life, he gets a job in a toy factory, adult Harry does. And he is this middle management worker. The underlings below him don't respect him. They pretty much think Christmas is a bunch of bullshit.
And his big thing is toys at that point are really freaking cheap. Flimsy plastic. The toys made in his day were nice and solid. They were something that a kid can have and it will last a real long time. And his whole thing is nothing's made to last. The joy is taken out of it because nobody appreciates quality anymore.
And so his personal life, on the other hand, it is this kind of, well, A normal, sane person would say, dude, you're creepy. Because what he does is he hangs on his rooftop and he watches the neighborhood kids through binoculars. And there's like little Susie, and she's a good little girl. So he gets his book and he writes down little Susie's name and all her attributes of, you know, tidies up her room, obeys her mother, and so on and so on and so on. And then he pays attention to the other kid, the kid who wants the penthouse subscription for life. The one who watches porn on his bed with a big centerfold is like, obviously this kid, he's naughty. He goes into the naughty list and he's like, and writes down all his flaws.
But furthermore, he knows every kid in the neighborhood. They all know him. They sit on a stoop and say, hi, Harry. So they, I mean, they're not afraid of him. It's Harry. But Harry is also single. You know, he doesn't have that interpersonal dynamic that his friends have. All of his friends and his brother are married. They have the significant other, and even if they're not married, they have somebody to go home to or come home to, and there's just
Harry lives alone.
Well, he's a typical East Coast bachelor. He has that whole look to him, you know, kind of schlubby. You know, mm-hmm. His boss calls him a schmuck behind his back. He thinks he doesn't hear him, but he does. And one of his coworkers that he used to work on the line with is going on vacation, and the guy basically steamrolls him into taking his shift. So he's pulling the double shift. You know, he gets out with the night crew.
And that's pretty much Harry's tipping point, where he's coming home late that night after doing the coworker's shift. And he passes by a bar, and he hears his coworkers absolutely ribbing him because, oh, I was supposed to go out with the wife on vacation, but no, I'm just in here drinking. You know, fuck this guy. And that's Harry's breaking point.
They basically treat him like a schmendrick. I mean, like, no respect whatsoever. He has some of the worst luck on the planet. You know, he's not a total schlemiel. I mean, he does have a personality, and he does have some good things going for him, like his brother and his brother's family. So his brother's wife and kids, you know, they love Harry, his nephews and everything, the two boys. And they remind me a lot of the actors that played Harry and Phil when they were little kids. And the 70s, you know, aspect of it really sticks out. Because there's some remnants of stuff from the 70s. Like one of the brothers is wearing a Star Wars pajamas and stuff. And I thought to myself, oh man, I so remember so much of this shit. Some of those kids in that movie were our age. And so I can identify with some of what's going on there because we lived that era.
So after hearing his friends in the bar rib him and destroy him and rip him apart, he goes home and he starts getting some of the toys that he makes off of the shelf. And he starts playing with this one doll that he's made, and he gets more and more frantic, and he starts humming A Christmas Carol. And it starts out kind of normal, how you would hum A Christmas Carol, and it starts getting more frantic and more enthusiastic and more and just... And I thought that scene was like, holy shit, this guy crushes it.
Yeah, this guy is there clearly a thespian. I mean, he has got this movie locked down. I mean, he is the center of attention, whatever scene he's in, and he gets some great wide shots and crowd scenes. I mean, there was a lot of quality in terms of the number of cast members in a scene. This isn't one of those small little movies like Friday the 13th where you might have mostly 5 or 6 people in a shot and then like a bar scene with maybe 30 or 40 people in it. I mean, this movie goes big in many ways.
There were bits like at the end of the movie when he's gone on his rampage a little bit, and he goes to find his brother Phil, and he's walking up through this cul-de-sac and all these houses, and the streets are just lined with like 100 Santas and reindeers, and I thought that scene looked really, really good.
It's like he's gone into a different reality.
Yeah, and I do like the production design in this movie, especially like places like Harry's house, the intimate spaces. I mean, this man lives for Christmas, so he has Christmas pictures, he makes toys, you know, he has old toys from the 40s and 50s that he plays with.
Part of the good look the movie has is that they lucked out. The guy who was the executive producer on the movie owned that toy factory and owned that assembly line. So they were able to shoot in there, use a real toy factory, giving it authenticity and gravitas, because that's where toys really get made.
And then he starts putting together a Santa suit. I mean, home stitching. And you almost never see that in a movie like this. The guy's just doing the stitch work. He's putting in the padding and the batting and stuff. And then he starts practicing his ho-ho-ho. He starts slowly at first.
Oh, this is a great scene.
Then he builds it up. And then more. And then pretty soon he is just bellowing these ho-ho-hos in one really long continuous shot. And I thought to myself, my God, this man is a revelation.
And then he gets to the point where he glues the beard on, because, of course, if you are Santa, you have to have a beard. And it's like, okay, I'm done now. I'm going to take it off. And he can't take the beard off. And he tugs and he tugs and he tugs. And it doesn't come off. And that's the point where he makes his transformation from Harry to Santa in his mind.
I love it when he goes into the bar where the co-workers and his boss are hanging out the first time. And his boss comes up to him, intros him to this guy who's doing some ad copy and promo work for the company to give toys to this hospital. And this gives Harry the idea. Oh, I know what I got to do. So he goes around to houses that have lots of toys under the tree, and he thugs these toys in the middle of the night.
Yeah, because please. There's a scene later on just after that where he's in the toy factory and he starts up all the machinery, and it starts, these conveyor belts start spitting out cheap plastic planes and cheap plastic toy soldiers, and they just start falling on the floor. And he gets up on this balcony and he just looks down and surveys his empire and says in his mind, this is bullshit, this will not stand.
He's taken a proactive stance, not just with allowing the machines to destroy the things that his co-workers were working on. He now goes and physically destroys them himself. And that puts him in that frame. Basically, this is like his first kill, in a way, these toys. And so when he finally goes over the edge during the Mass, when all the Catholics are in church, he waits for them to come out. He goes after the one who insulted him by saying, oh, you know, nobody cares about these toys or kids or whatever.
And more that he insulted Harry, it's more that he was demeaning Christmas. Mm-hmm. He saw it as a marketing opportunity to, hey, we're going to donate all these toys to this orphanage, but, you know, we're going to do it because we're a company and it gets our name out there and it's advertising, and not for the spirit of Christmas. And Harry said, no, that's not how Santa works, and goes and kills the dude.
Yeah, and when he shows up at the hospital, he is immediately met by the security guard. For a second, I was going, oh, wait, is that Stan Lee? that would have been something. No, but he gets into this little argument with the security guard. Then he gives him a present. And so now he's in that mode where he is giving joy. He's giving of himself to the security guard, who goes in and gets the doctors and nurses. And then he brings his first sack of toys and starts, you know, he opens that up and says, I brought presents. And they're all suspicious at first. Like, who the hell is this guy? I mean, this is New Jersey after all. Then he goes to the van, which has a sleigh painted on each side. Opens the back and there's bags full of toys he's raided or made from, you know, and he basically says, here, have at it, and gives them all this joy to pass on to these kids.
And then they take him into the Christmas party. And it's an interesting snapshot of Harry's life as a potential, because he's having fun, he's interacting with people,
he's dancing,
he's giving joy to kids. And there's this moment where, you know, they come up to him and it's like, oh, Santa, talk, you know, we want these gifts. And he does this speech. He does this typical, he does, you know, be good, obey your teachers, obey your parents, drink your milk. And if you're not, then I will bring you something horrible. So even as a functional Santa, he still can't quite get the Christmas spirit. He's still dysfunctional.
It's interesting.
I love that scene because there's this pause where everyone's just looking at him. The kids are like, huh? And the adults are kind of a little bit aghast too. And he's just like, and then he starts laughing, and it's this big belly aching ho ho ho, and everyone relaxes and has a good time. But there's just that one moment where it's like, oh, this ain't good.
Now, the parents are obviously a little taken aback by his telling the kids he's going to give them something bad. But the thing about the dance number that's interesting to me is it kind of reminds me of a Michael Cimino film like Heaven's Gate, where you just have this dance that goes on and people are having a great time. Also Deer Hunter, which also has a dance in it of a similar type in a working class town, in a working class place.
I'm actually glad you brought up The Deer Hunter, because this movie is a very strong parallel to The Deer Hunter very strong parallel to Taxi Driver. Mm-hmm. Where,
oh yeah,
Harry, throughout the movie, he's talking about the tune. The tune is now going to be complete. Kind of similar to the way that Travis Bickle's the rain is going to come and wash the streets clean.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Taxi Driver, being a New York film, has this... the same feel to it because of that whole, the milieu that was coming out of New York, the gritty streets, the trash cans, the brick walls, you know. I mean, the chase scene near the end where the villagers take their torches and chase after Frankenstein's monster. I mean, there's this one great shot of just a blank brick wall as Santa stops, looks behind him, and runs past. It's just like 1,000 other films of its type that came previously to that.
And yeah, and it's just shots of like the feet running and like the hands mm-hmm. with the torches. Actually, I thought the parallel for Frankenstein was also really strong too, because mm-hmm. you had... So Frankenstein is this innocent creature who is socially awkward and doesn't know any better and is abused and mistreated his entire life and then goes on his rampage at the very end. That is an exact parallel to Harry. He is a innocent creature. Okay, yes. As we sit here saying, dude, you're staring at kids through binoculars on a roof, that means you're kind of weird. But no, he does it because that's what Santa does. And so you have Harry, this innocent creature, abused by his coworkers and can't stand anymore and goes on a rampage. And then the torch-bearing citizens come out at the very end of the movie.
There is one very sinister scene that I thought was going to play out completely differently, where Harry goes after Moss. In his room, he basically walks up to Moss's house. He runs up to his house at late at night, like 8 o'clock or something like that. Say it's dark out. He stares in the window, sees Moss watching TV, playing with one of the toys from the production line, this cheap ass motorcycle with a removable motorcycle rider figure. And he and his mom are going to visit relatives or something like that. And he doesn't want to go. He wants to sit and watch TV. And so that's like, oh, you're talking back to your mom. You're not doing what she says. And they come outside. And before they exit the house, he takes some mud, puts it on his face. So he's going all commando here. And he puts his face and hands against the wall, leaves this impression of his hands, his mouth, and his nose.
Basically marking the house. You are now a marked child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's very stalkerish. And then he hides in the bushes and waits for them to come out. And Moss turns around, hears a noise, turns around, because he'd seen him. He's seen Harry out of the corner of his eyes, and the look on this kid's face, my God, they got some of the greatest actors. This kid is great. He takes like 15, 20 seconds to go up to these bushes, and you think his mom's going to come and save him at the last second. Uh-uh. Harry comes up, tries to grab him, going, urgh! It scares the shit out of him. He goes running. His mom slaps him across the face for wasting her time, and they drive off. And I'm thinking, you've got stalking, you've got really good suspense. You've got the scare that subverts in the usual kind of jump scare where he actually goes for the kid. And then his mom, there's child abuse. Whoosh! And then they take off. And you're going, oh, God. Because I thought he was going to take off and run. But no, this was much better.
If you're going to have a flaw in any of the acting, in any movie, I don't care what genre you're in, it's probably going to be the kid. The kids in this movie, I thought, sold it. They sold the innocence. Like when they corner Harry after he goes on his rampage, but before the mob shows up and starts trying to kill him. So they're still like, hey, there's Santa, get Santa. And so the adults are over here. But like Harry is surrounded by the kids trying to defend Santa because, well, it's Santa. Of course he's not going to be bad. And just the innocence and that little girl with the switchblade.
I mean, having this little blonde girl with this holding this big, long switchblade out against her father or whichever one of the parents he was, it's just like, holy crap. I mean, this one can only happen in New York or New Jersey.
But they're also very, very believable.
They are. They're very much just... almost a stereotype, but not quite. They wanted to give them a slight edge, so it's less total reality, slight fantasy, but you believe it because it's closer to reality than the other way.
And I loved the ending of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that Harry, on the run from the mob, gets in his van that is decorated like Santa's sleigh and starts driving away and starts trying to escape the mob. And they're closing in on all sides. They're coming up every street. And he goes and takes a turn and drives off this bridge. And all of a sudden, the van starts flying away. And now, meanwhile, Phil, his brother, has been trying to catch up to him to try and defuse the situation. And he's like rolling down this hill trying to catch up to him. And Lynn looks up and sees, well, we're not sure because we're seeing it from Phil's point of view. And then it cuts to Harry's van flying off into the sky with this kind of angelic music, and you've got the sleigh bells, and it flies off into the moon.
There's a really great scene and a cut moment in that where you see Harry's face as the van is flying, where he's just like totally enraptured that I'm in a flying sleigh.
Because at that point, Harry's transformation into Santa is complete. Now, what really happens is when Phil rolls down the hill that we hear this crash of the van. Harry drove off the bridge and died. But in those last few seconds of life, he has become Santa. He has won. He flies off into the night.
This is exactly the kind of movie I would want to see at a drive-in or some little theater. Hell, I wouldn't mind seeing this at the Cinerama. I mean, given the acting chops, the production value, the everything about this movie screams it could have been an A-lister if they had A-listed movies like this.
This is John Waters' favorite Christmas movie of all time. And, okay, me and him don't necessarily see on every level, but I think in this instance, he's right.
This is a fantastic movie. On so many levels, it does everything perfectly right. And there's absolutely nothing that I considered flawed about this movie at all, which is kind of weird for the project. There's usually something that we can nitpick on, but this doesn't have that.
I could see somebody getting a little antsy because the first 40 or so minutes of this movie is building up Harry's character. It's establishing the rules that he is playing by. It is establishing the world that he lives in. And it's a very, very slow burn. And after that 40 minutes, then it starts taking off.
Yeah, and the first kill happens at 51 minutes, 27 seconds. The stab in the eye. And I actually only know that because I watched it again immediately. After I saw him whack those three people with the toy soldier with the sword, goes into the eye, and then he axes the other two people, and I had to see it again because it was so fucking cool. I was like, oh my god, I wasn't expecting that. I knew there was going to be gore, but I didn't know what, and yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. This wasn't a case of ew. This was, I got to see this again. I checked the time. It was like 51 minutes, 27 seconds. Like, you know, I wasn't missing a kill in this at all. This could have gone entirely without gore, and I would have been happy.
It's very much a dark comedy. It's very much a character study. But, yeah, it's the gore. I don't care.
Yeah, there's hardly any of it. And there's nothing else that's even remotely objectionable.
Yeah, I couldn't see them remaking this film because I think it's perfect as is. Mm-hmm. This is a movie which doesn't need a remake.
Couldn't remake this without losing something.
Exactly. I mean,
for starters, you wouldn't have the same actor playing Harry.
Even above and beyond losing Harry, I would be sad to lose the supporting cast, like Jeffrey DeMunn, the guy who played Phil. I mean, I thought he didn't have a huge part, but he was a very strong part.
The casting of these two actors is fucking brilliant. They look so much alike and near in age that I completely buy them being brothers. Same nose, same basic facial structure, about the same height and hair color. Like, holy shit. I mean, this is a inspired casting. I loved every minute with these guys on screen.
Well, I've always liked Jeffrey DeMunn in his work anyway. I mean, I thought he was pretty good with when he was doing Dale on The Walking Dead. When he was doing the movies for Frank Darabont, I always thought he was strong. So I totally am on board with you on that.
I mean, these people are so well cast for their type, for just these working class stiffs. I mean, you got the beer belly guys, you got the slim, you know, kind of gaunt looking guys, you've got balding, you know, guys, you've got people with beards, you've got the whole kind of that whole Eastern aesthetic with the clothing, the style of the 70s, you've got the old vehicles and everything, and everything just has this worn, lived in, but comfortable look to it.
So do you have anything else left you got to say about the...
Nope.
I'm good.
All right. All right, so Ashley, was Christmas Evil naughty or nice?
Nice. I would say the naughty is pretty tame by comparison to a lot of movies. The intent is not to sicken. The kills come in pretty late in the movie, and they're relatively brief, and there's not a lot of blood. Even in the beginning when young Harry cuts his hand, it's from behind his hand. You only see a blood trickle on the floor for a little bit.
There's a little bit when Harry kills the guys on the steps of the church that when the guy gets stabbed in the eye, there's a little bit of blood there.
There's a little bit of splatter from the hatchet, too. But
yeah, he kills the woman and two guys, the people that had it coming, basically, and in his mind.
So, Brad, naughty or nice?
Nice.
All right. So, yeah, I think everybody thinks this movie is nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Brad, was Christmas Evil Kung Fu Grip or a lump of coal?
It was Kung Fu Grip. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. It was great.
So, Ashley, Kung Fu Grip or lump of coal?
Oh, this got gripped so damn tight it is strangling the fucking coal.
If you go into this movie expecting it to be Silent Night, Deadly Night, or Black Christmas, or something more recent like the movie that Goldberg was in, Santa's Sleigh, then you're going to be crushingly disappointed. But if you manage to set aside those expectations and just go in with an open mind, I think this movie will really reward you.
It is a lot of fun in many levels.
So, yeah, all right. Everybody loves the movie. Everybody loves Santa.
It's the gift that keeps giving.
Okay, that's enough eggnog for you. You're cut off. So, join us here next week when we take a look at Dawn of the Mummy. I've never heard of it. You've probably never heard of it. It would have been lost if it hadn't been for this list. So, drop us an email. TheVideoNastyProject@gmail.com is the address. And we'll catch you next week. Until that time, stay ho, ho, ho.
All right, now say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Come on there, louder there, with more feeling. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.